We are back. Thank you for joining us for yet another week. This show is called Polar Opposites because my co-host Dante and I talk about pop culture, entertainment, music, and politics, and it's always a great discussion. Sometimes we agree, sometimes we disagree, and it's always an interesting debate. But nevertheless, you're here and you're ready for another episode. Last week's episode was great, and this episode will be no different. I'm feeling good. Okay, let me stop lying. I'm not feeling good, but we will touch on that in a second. Dante, how are you?
I can't complain. Even if I did, nobody would listen to it, right? So it doesn't matter. But nah, I'm all right. It's, you know, fresh start to the week. We got to make the most out of it. I try to come on here and be positive. So make the most out of it. Positive energy into the universe. And hopefully it comes back to me.
Yes, I guess it's reciprocal in that way. Like we always say on every single episode, we have a link in the description where you guys can send us anonymous questions. So if you've always wanted to ask Dante and I something, if you always wanted to include something in the show that would be great for discussion, the link is there. Just scroll down a little bit, click that link, send us anything that you want. And y'all have been sending in amazing questions, and I can't wait to read the questions that y'all sent in this week. So as always, you can always follow us on social media. I think that's pretty much it. Dante, am I missing anything?
No, I think you covered it. It's always a solid intro. I think we covered everything.
Okay. So like I said earlier, you know, I'm not feeling that great. I don't have any symptoms or anything. But like I said in last week's episode, I got my second round of the Pfizer vaccine. And I'm happy because I didn't get any symptoms. I wasn't expecting any because for the first one, I didn't feel any symptoms. So I was expecting to feel the same way going into the second round. But honestly, I just feel tired. Throughout the day, I've just been yawning. I just feel like very, very exhausted. Hopefully you guys don't hear it in my voice, but I'm very tired. So after this, I'm probably gonna like nap or something because I am worn out and exhausted. So that vaccine, I guess, is doing that to me. Or maybe it's all in my head. Maybe the placebo put in me is the reason why I feel like this. But I don't know. Let the tinfoil hat Twitter do as you wish with what I said. But other than that, I'm feeling good. How are you doing?
So I can just say, you know, after my second vaccine, I didn't feel too great. I got the Pfizer as well, and it felt like I had a hangover, basically, for like the next day and a half. But no regrets. Glad I did it. For the people that are skeptical about it, you know, if this all turns out that we were guinea pigs and it has devastating effects, I'll be the first person to say I was wrong and you were right. And if not, then I expect you guys to say that you guys were wrong, because that's one thing about me. And I think that says a lot about a person's character. I have no problem admitting when I'm wrong. That makes you a better person. If you could look at something, a situation, you're presented with facts and say, well, I was wrong about this. And I'm big enough to do that. So that's just my two cents on the vaccination thing right now.
I hope you guys are doing well. I never ask about you guys. Hope you guys are doing well. I don't know what you're doing as you're listening to this. Maybe you're on your way to work. Maybe you're taking a shower. Maybe you're doing some chores or whatever. I'm glad that you decided to click on this week's episode because we love coming on here and talking to you guys. Feel free, like Dante says, sometimes to talk back to us, because some of y'all have told us that when you're listening to an episode, it feels like you're having a conversation with us and you start to talk to yourself and then you realize nobody else is in the room. Sometimes that happens. So if that happens, go ahead. Embrace it, but we enjoy it and we love coming on here and talking to y'all, you know, each week. So, you know, speaking of talking to you guys and, you know, you talking to us, you guys sent us some great listener questions. So we're gonna address that on this week's episode. I'll do the first one. So our first listener question this week is, does it ever feel like you're carrying the immense mental health load for your family? Like you're the only one healing from the past, but they're stuck and you feel responsible for making sure everyone heals as well. Dante, how would you answer that one?
Well, all that, you know, that's a personal question. They're asking for our experience with that. I can say for me personally, I have not experienced that. The load that I've experienced would be dealing with it in the present when everybody else seems to be ignoring it, a situation. And that makes you feel very lonely, because then you start questioning, like, so do these people really care about what's going on? Are they choosing to ignore it? Are they not strong enough to deal with this? Are we just going to keep trying to pass it off until it slaps you in the face. It can't be ignored anymore. I dealt with something like that about 7 years ago at this point, and it made me look at people close to me, people in my family, a lot differently. After some time it had passed and I was on my healing process, I reached out to them and talked to them about it, and asked why they handled situations the way they did. And, you know, we've come to some sort of understanding. It doesn't mean that I agree, because we don't have to agree, but I can try to understand. That's my personal situation for it, but not healing with the past and trying to make people heal with me. No, I haven't experienced that personally. How about you?
I haven't experienced that either. Whenever I think of this question, I think of like generational curses. And I know some people believe in generational curses, where things that happen to your life are meant to happen, and that's because of a curse that somebody placed on your family. And I don't believe in that, because I feel like it can almost be like a self-fulfilling prophecy, where because something is meant to happen and it's negative, whatever negative thing that happens in your life, you're like, oh, it's due to the generational curse. I'm just cursed. And I feel like to a certain extent, we have control over our own destiny. I don't feel like there's outer forces out there that are dictating our lives. I think for the most part, we are in control of our actions and where we want to go. It's kind of like similar to the way I look at zodiac signs. I know it's not really related, but I don't believe in zodiac signs either, because I feel like it's a way for people to artificially be predisposed to like or dislike somebody. And I don't think that's fair, especially when you haven't gotten to know somebody's character. I think it's kind of silly, to be honest. I think that it can be cool or whatever when certain things match up and you're like, oh, you're a Taurus or you're an Aries. Oh, we're compatible or whatever. But what about the people that aren't compatible? When you know somebody's sign, but you haven't gotten the chance to know them personally, are you predisposed to dislike them? I think that everybody should be, you know, given the chance to prove themselves wrong or right. And then if they do, you know, take it as that. But don't let a sign or an idea of a generational curse determine how you treat other people or how you take steps to improve yourself in your own life.
So for the zodiac sign thing, yeah, like I don't base my life on what co-star says, you know, and what my moon is in and my third sun and all that stuff. Nah, if you get down with that, good for you. But nah, I don't base my life off of zodiac signs. But there's two things I want to say about that, is that there definitely are some characteristic traits that, you know, different zodiac signs have. Like, we're both Capricorns, right? There's a lot that Capricorn says that you and I have in common with what the overall theme of the sign is. You know, determined, strong-willed people. Yeah, for sure. I think that, you know, I'm not speaking for you, but I think that fits both of us. And then I say it on here too. The vast majority of Sagittariuses are horrible people. Okay. I've only met like two good ones in my whole life. So just putting that out there. But besides that, honestly, I'm done with the zodiac talk.
Yeah. I don't believe in zodiac signs. Y'all know my stance on this. And I think that zodiac signs are so general that it can apply to anybody. Think about Capricorn, hardworking. Who isn't hardworking? Like, oh, strong-willed. Everybody is strong-willed. Like, that can be placed on anybody. Yeah, but there's some people that are Capricorns that aren't strong-willed. So it's like, what do you say to those people? So I think it's just silly, because most of the time they're broad enough to where people that want to believe the positive traits would be like, yeah, I like to work hard. Yeah, I'm diligent or whatever. Anybody can apply to that.
Man, you're going to have Zodiac Twitter coming for you.
I don't care. Y'all come for me all you want.
Wait until their moon is in Leo. They coming for that ass, Justin.
Rising sun, rising star. I don't believe in it. For whoever asked this question, I hope we were able to answer it to the best of our ability. Thank you so much for writing in.
Yes, thank you. And I'll read the second question we're going to read today. This is another anonymous question, obviously. And they said, I've heard that straight men don't change unless it's for a woman. This always felt weird, because I think it infantilizes grown men and puts the onus on a woman to be, in quotes, the right woman for a man to treat them well. What are your thoughts, Justin?
I believe whoever wrote that, there's a lot of immature guys out there when it comes to getting serious. They meet the right girl or whatever. Because of that right girl, they decide to change their negative behaviors to adapt to that girl. So it kind of like that person says, infantilizes men, because I don't think that it should take the idea of a good woman coming into your life to change for that person. Just be a good person overall. That growing up shouldn't be predicated on somebody else. It should be an internal thing with the work that you're doing for yourself to grow and change.
I agree with the majority of what you said there. I don't know. This question is complicated because, yes, somebody can make changes in their life and maybe they didn't think that they could do it on their own, and then they credit that to another person. In this case, you're talking about a man and a woman, right? So maybe a man is making progress in his life and changing and becoming a better person, and he feels the catalyst to that was this woman that he's with. Now, me personally, I believe that people are going to make changes for their life and in their life that they want to make. I don't think a person can make you change. That's just my personal opinion. You can say that this person, you know, helped you come along and help you grow and be better. But I don't think that somebody is going to say to themselves, okay, I need to change just for this person. I mean, I've never seen it, but could happen, right? It's just, I have never seen that, and it's never been a thought. I've never said, hey, I need to change because of, and then put somebody's name. No. And I don't want people to take this too literal, because, you know, it could say something very small. Like, let's say you're horrible with being on time places and the person you're with is a stickler for time. Yeah, you're going to start showing up on time a little bit more, but that's not like some life changing core of your foundation, who you are type of change. It's just, hey, we get in less fights when I'm not late, so I'm going to show up on time. You know, if that's something you want to take, you want to give somebody credit for, great. But I don't think that at their core, people change because of somebody else who they're with.
Interesting question, by the way. I feel like whoever wrote that is very smart. I can tell, honestly, I can tell by reading these letters that a lot of y'all are very smart, and I love it.
And if you wrote in, if you're the person that wrote that question and you're a woman, let us know if a man has changed for you. I'm not being funny. I'd really want to know what you think about that. And ladies, have you ever changed for a man? Something to think about. Let us know.
I think that people have, but I'll keep that to myself. I'll keep that to myself. I think it definitely goes both ways. We love these. Continue to write us more, and we'll continue reading these. So if you have sent us a question, we will get to it. We promise we answer two this week, just so we're making sure that we're answering as many questions as possible each week. Let's talk about the small stuff before we get into the big stuff. So Dante, J. Cole, he released his album, much anticipated. It's been 3 years since his last album, KOD. Fans were interested to see what J. Cole would deliver. You know, I listened to it and I gave it an open mind. I was like, let's see what J. Cole is going to deliver. And I listened to it. It was just an album, just a standard rap album. I don't think that this album really does anything for his legacy. I'm always somebody that believes that each album should, you know, beat your previous album. So that means better content, you know, better beats, more interesting stuff. You should always grow as an artist. And I don't know, it doesn't feel like J. Cole really took the steps to grow. Don't get me wrong, the bars were great, but it's not anything memorable that I'll revisit, if that makes sense. There's not anything compelling me to go back and listen to the album. Like, what's the story of this album? What does this album do in the grand scheme of hip-hop? Really nothing, in my opinion. There was no bangers, there was no bops, nothing to make me move. It was pretty standard, just a standard J. Cole album, and I'm kind of disappointed because somebody that's lauded as much as him should come with it. You know, he came with it with bars, but with memorable beats and bops and bangers, there was none of it. It left a lot to be desired. What did you think?
Damn, you said a lot there. Let me try and just give my thoughts on it. So I think that J. Cole suffers from the same kind of issue that Nas has suffered from, where his beat selection isn't the greatest. That's been the running punchline on Nas throughout his whole career, is that he selects horrible beats. I won't say these J. Cole beats were horrible, but he definitely could use somebody else coming in and helping him with production to make some of these beats better. I've listened to the album once all the way through. It's going to be in my rotation for the next couple of weeks so I can, you know, really dissect it and everything. I can tell you that I was not a fan of KOD, right? So that's not something really I ever go back to. I go back to 2014 Forest Hills Drive all the time. I like the Sideline Story, so I still listen to that. So I want to give this, you know, more spin and more airplay. I really like the third track on there, My Life. You know how everybody... We talked about this before, but everybody has like an artist or a rapper that they like that isn't really that good, but it's just something about them that you like. 21 Savage is that for me. Like, I like him on this song a lot. So I don't know. But no, I don't think it's like an album where we're like, oh my God, the game has changed. And I think it's, you know, it's only been out, not even been out for a week. So like, if anybody's out there saying that, you're doing that, this new generation recency bias where everything that comes out brand new is the GOAT. If you're saying that this album is the GOAT, is one of the best albums ever, yeah, you can't determine that in 4 days that it's one of the best albums of all time.
Hey, I think when something's great, something's great. I think that it took a short amount of time to realize that Kendrick's To Pimp a Butterfly was a masterpiece. I don't think that it has to take a long time to realize that something is great. When you hear it on its first initial listen, you know which way you're, you know, flowing. On initial listen, for me, I was like, this ain't it. It's not a bad album, but it's nothing that does anything for hip hop and for his legacy. For somebody that you consider a legend, you know, I expected more. Because speaking of that, I did a poll on the Polar Opposites Instagram, and the majority of people said that J. Cole is not a legend, and I was right.
You should figure out, can we do it where you give them three options, legend, icon, and then neither? Because you only gave them the two options of legend or icon, so maybe some people were voting icon because they were like, he definitely ain't no legend, but I don't even feel like he's an icon. You know?
No, I don't think they would have voted at all. Don't backstep now. You no, said
I'm
that
not.
He
I'm saying,
legend.
Like, you want to give people a fair shot, right? Like, if they're saying, I don't believe he's neither, then you should be able to vote that way. So then we could see what our fan base thinks.
I think that based on what they voted, it's pretty clear. I don't think that J. Cole is a legend. I think that he's a great rapper and will go down in history as a great rapper. But just because you're great, it doesn't make you a legend. To me, just having one solid project is not worthy, like I said last week, of being a legend. His biggest songs that you would think are number one hits did not fall anywhere close to the number one on the chart. So it's like, what are we talking about here?
I want y'all to know about them polls is that Justin got a bunch of fake Instagram accounts. And he be skewing the results on a lot of stuff we be putting up, yo. It's crazy. I've seen it firsthand. These profiles that follow 400 people got two followers. I know what he be up to, man.
No, don't
I'm kidding.
Even put that out there. I really don't. I do have a secret Instagram, but I don't have a Finsta. Now, y'all know something about me that I wanted to keep close to the vest, but, you know, Dante made me reveal it when I didn't want to.
Anyway, so let's move on to another one of Justin's favorite people. Ellen DeGeneres.
Word on the street is that her show 2022, the season that her show will come out, will be its last. Everybody knows that over the summer, Ellen came under fire because they said that she keeps a toxic work environment, that she's not really that friendly behind the scenes. And it was, you know, covered in exposés, and people that worked for her were coming out and saying that she's not very nice, even though, like, she presents to the world this positive image of be kind to one another, love everybody. Behind the scenes, I guess she was acting differently, and she got exposed, and a lot of people were turned off, to the point where she lost over 1 million viewers of her daytime TV show, which is a big deal. So, you know, her show is leaving, and it's going to be a big blow to TV because she's no longer there anymore. But it's interesting how people have kind of turned on her, and now they're canceling her show.
I don't know if people understand how big of a deal losing 1 million viewers daily is. Like, if 1 million people tuning out, that's a lot. That's difference making. So it might not even have been a herd decision, like, hey guys, I think we had a great run here, blah 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 blah. They might have been looking at like, hey, it ain't the same no more, so we're gonna let you do this with dignity and say that, you know, you decide to end this, but really, you know, you're getting served your termination papers. That's probably what I think it is, because listen, if she added 1 million viewers after this summer, there would be no talk about stopping this thing or no talk about canceling it. Everything comes down to the almighty dollar.
That's why I always tell people it's important to be authentic to yourself, because you can only project that facade for so long before it starts to crack, and then you reveal who you really are. And sometimes people might not like that image that they see beyond the mask that you wear every day. So just be yourself. It's much easier that way, to be honest, than to pretend to be something that you're not. And not to say that she's a terrible person, but if I was, you know, mean to my producers and kept a toxic work environment, I wouldn't present an image of everything's great, I'm positive, and be nice to one another. It's hypocritical. And to have to look at my staff every day who sees the way I treat people behind the scenes, but then I go out there and I pretend I'm nice and everybody thinks I'm nice, it's kind of weird.
Have you ever watched or enjoyed her show, by the way?
I've never sat down and watched her show. I don't think that anybody has time these days to watch daytime TV. What I do see are the clips that are uploaded to YouTube. I've seen, like, interviews with celebrities that I'm interested in. But other than that, I don't, like, watch her show like that. But it's been on for a long time, and I do remember certain segments or certain interviews that she gave that were memorable.
Yeah, I remember the only thing I really remember from her show is when Obama came on there when he was a candidate still. Mm-hmm. And he was dancing with her after everything came out last summer. I remember watching her interview with Dakota Johnson from 50 Shades of Grey and how awkward that exchange was.
And that was like the first sign of cracking. You know, in the comments, people were like, damn, she's kind of getting exposed right now. Because Dakota, she came with it. She wasn't afraid to back down because she was calling it for what it is. She invited Ellen to her party and she didn't get a response back. And then Ellen was acting like Dakota didn't invite her when that wasn't the case. Imagine if somebody tried to gaslight you in that way. I would tell the truth. I'm like, nah, I invited you. You didn't show up. Don't try and act fake now that I'm on your show.
I think people think because this is live TV, they're like, I can say this and we'll talk about it later. Nah, I'm going to expose that ass on air, baby. Don't exactly. Tell a lie about me. I won't tell the truth about you. We can keep it like that.
I wish we had more positive news to talk about next, but we always talk about how we're not activists. There are people that devote their life's work to being activists, so I'm never going to come on here and pretend to be so. But I will, you know, using this platform, talk about things that are important, things that are happening in the world. And we've all been seeing what's been going on, you know, with Palestine and, you know, the Israelis and how they've been in conflict for quite some time. And the conflicts are escalating and there's hundreds of people that have been killed at this point. It's just terrible to see. And I think the hesitancy that people are having with this is that for some reason with that area and region of the world, it's just not familiar to a lot of Americans. They're not familiar with it. One, we're all the way over here. And two, people honestly don't understand the root of the conflict. So nobody wants to speak out about something that they don't know much about. And I think that sometimes that can be an excuse to not, you know, speak out about something similar to what we saw over the summer with Black Lives Matter. Man, I'm not black. I'm not familiar with black people. I don't want to, you know, speak out a term. But when we're talking about humanity and treating others with dignity and respect, that's not something that you need to learn or, you know, relate to. It's something that should be innate because we're all humans, right? So, you know, that's what I'll say about that before we get into, you know, talking about Palestine. You know, I have a lot of friends. I won't say a lot. I have some friends. Look at me lying on here. I have a lot of friends that are Palestinians. No, I don't. Whoa. I have, you know, a few friends that are Palestinian. And, you know, they've been posting like crazy. And I've been, you know, getting informed with what's been happening. And I want to read a quote that I saw that somebody posted on their story. And it says, being pro-Palestine and against anti-Semitism go hand in hand because all systems of oppression reinforce one another and none can be fought in isolation. And I thought that was very powerful. And I think it kind of rings true with everything that's going on right now. But again, I just want to tell y'all that wrong is wrong and we should stand with people, you know, that are obviously under attack. So that's what I'll say before I'll let you go, Dante.
Yeah, I think the way that you approached it was good. Listen, anytime that innocent people are being killed, that's something that we all can empathize with and sympathize with, no matter where you stand on the issue. When civilians and little kids are being killed because of the actions of a government, I think that's something that we can all speak out on and say that it isn't right. And the history of issues between Palestine and Israel is very complicated. I want to preface the same way Justin did. Like, I'm not an expert on Middle East history. I've been watching videos and trying to read articles to get myself somewhat up to speed, but I never want to come on here and give you an opinion of mine that isn't fully formed. And that may come across as ignorant or hurtful. And I never want to give you a history lesson that isn't factual, because we talk about how important facts are on here. But my heart does go out to innocent people that are being killed. That in no world is that okay.
Well, so that leads us to our main topic. So last week, Dante and I were talking about just the recording that, you know, we recorded previously. And sometimes when we stay on the phone, we start talking and sometimes an episode topic develops. So we always talk about holding people accountable. That means Republicans, that means Democrats, that means people that are on our side. We think it's important to not only hold us accountable, but to hold other people accountable. And sometimes it can be difficult to hold people that are on your side accountable for maybe going too far. So, you know, that's basically what we're talking about this week. We're talking about instances in which the left has sometimes gone too far. Because even though Dante and I consider ourselves, you know, on the left, I guess, we can acknowledge moments in which the left has gone too far. Maybe gone too far in ways that we don't agree with. And it's okay to disagree with people that are on your side, because I think that leads to healthy debate. I think that fits in with the meaning of this show. And I think it, you know, is a really good topic to address, because I don't think we've ever talked about it before.
I agree. You know, we talked about last week the problem with liberals, right? And we're not, you know, lumping everybody together, but we hold people accountable, right? So we're going to talk about the problem with people on the left and instances where they go too far. And just for good measure, in the spirit of holding people accountable, we're going to talk about people on the right and how they do it too.
You think the left goes too far? What? What are you talking about?
I know for a radical liberal like you.
Oh my gosh.
That you might think that, yeah, me criticizing the left is crazy because talking about you and your people. But yes, there are times where the left goes way too far. And I saw the perfect tweet to explain my thought process and feelings on this, right? So Michael Harriet tweeted, "Me, I love what blank person did." Twitter responds, "Blank is trash. In 1979, they stole a pencil from a child who was born without a head. Me, okay. I just like the one thing that they did, though." Twitter, "So you're supporting robbing headless kids?" That's what it's like being on the left, you know, like it's crazy. Like we talked about this yesterday, and this could go with normal people too, separating a person from their works. So a person could dedicate their life to doing amazing works that advance humanity at every level. Behind the scenes, they might be a horrible person. Does that, how do you separate it? Where do you stand on that line of separating a work from the person? And I feel as though the left will attack people and bring up stuff that somebody said on Twitter when they were 15 years old. And it's like, come on now. I'm sure if you go back in anybody's past, you can find something that they said or did that isn't up to the level today, you know, or like the tweet said, 1979. It's 2021. Are we canceling somebody for stealing a pencil in 1979? Does that make them a horrible person the rest of their life? So, yes, I believe that the left goes too far, and I think they do a lot of digging to go too far to make something that may be insignificant and bring it to the spotlight and see what the chances are of canceling that person.
I don't know. To me, I don't think that cancel culture is a thing. I always talk about it. It's just not a thing. I don't believe in doing a witch hunt and going and digging into somebody's past to find something problematic to try and, you know, get them fired or get them in trouble in some way. I do believe in accountability, and I do believe in consequences. And I think that those two things go hand in hand. If you did something terrible, you should answer to it. Do I believe in this culture of like going on a witch hunt and just finding something about somebody? I don't. With, you know, social media, we have access to a lot. You know, back in the day, there was no YouTube where somebody can find something like a stand-up comic, for example. There wasn't infrastructure in place to go out and find those clips or, you know, that comedy special to see where somebody was saying something problematic. These days, that's easy. It's easy to do that. It's easy to look at the past and say, man, that stuff would not be acceptable today. And that's okay because it's called growth. I would hope that our society is progressing to the point where we're able to call stuff out and say, hey, maybe that wasn't the best thing to say. The important thing is, how are we learning and growing from that moment? You know, if that was problematic, has that person grown and changed since then? And if they had, you can't hold them to that same standard. Everybody makes mistakes. Now, the degree to which you made that mistake is different for everybody. You know, what mistakes are we willing to forgive here? Because I don't forgive the obvious things that are wrong. But, you know, a slip of the tongue here, saying something incorrectly here, but learning from it and, you know, showing the world that you've learned and you're not that person, that's fine by me. I think what the left needs to learn is to learn to forgive. You can have accountability, you know, you can have consequences, right? But with that comes forgiveness. Learn to forgive as well. If you've made a mistake in your life, you've probably been forgiven for it. So if somebody else makes a mistake, open up your heart and have that same forgiveness for other people.
So Justin's message to the left is, let that hurt go, sis. That's what it sounds like.
Let no, it go, kidding. But learn from it is the most important thing.
So let me ask you something, because when you brought up the example of a comedian, is comedy a safe space? Are you able to make jokes that are offensive, things that you couldn't say in a conversation, but if you're making a joke about it? And let me give you an example, right? This special is 40 years old at this point now, but Eddie Murphy's role in Delirious, he said a lot of very disparaging things about gay people. And all those people in the audience were laughing their asses off. Couldn't get enough of it. Eddie Murphy's eating it up. All these gay jokes. I'm pretty sure people's feelings were hurt by that. Now, if this is for the sake of comedy or for the sake of entertainment, does that make it okay? Is comedy a safe space?
Well, I don't think it's that easy. Let me ask you this. This kind of answers your question. Would Eddie Murphy in 2021 make those same jokes today?
I kind of feel like he would. Same, like Dave Chappelle has never stopped making transgender jokes. Never.
I mean, you can joke, like, you can joke about black people, you can joke about, you know, trans people, you know, as if they're okay with that. At the same time, you have to be funny. It's cheap to attack low-hanging fruit. Anybody can do that. The skill of a comedian is to be funny. Anybody can make a joke, but actually being funny is the skill. You know, it's so cheap to go after somebody, but are you actually funny?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. So you said, you know, if they're okay with it, like who speaks for whoever they are, though? You know, and I agree with you, though, right? So if it's funny and you're not blatantly out there trying to hurt people's feelings and attack people, and you're actually like making good jokes and you know, in some cases teaching people and bringing awareness to certain situations, then I agree with it. Like, let it be. Let this person do their art form and we could talk about it. But if you're just going out there and you're saying, hey, guess what? Black people are lazy. That's not funny.
It's not funny. Like, that's where I think that people have a point to criticize. And even if it is funny, sometimes people can be offended by the joke that was funny. The thing is, you know, people are going to be offended about anything and everything. You're never going to please everybody. You said last week you can be the tastiest and sweetest peach in the tree, but don't everybody like peaches? Everybody isn't going to like what you have to say, and that's okay. I think with comedy, it's just something that you have to, you know, expect. But I think comedians are having trouble because it's like, man, back in the day, I used to be able to joke about this. Maybe back then it was okay to bash on gay people. But guess what? Times have changed and people have evolved. Society has evolved. So at the same time, how about you evolve your comedy, right? You know, if the society is changing, evolve your comedy and adapt with the times. If you're so funny, show your skills.
Ooh, but what if that leads to them start? Okay, so it's, hey, times have changed and I'm not going to make these gay jokes anymore. But now the new marginalized people are transgender people. So now these jokes are going to come at their expense. I think that would reveal a lot about a person and the type of person they are if that's how they decide to adapt their comedy. Who's the new marginalized people I can make fun of and pick on for the sake of entertainment?
And LGBT, like, they're all, you know, a part of the same community. So I think that if you're making jokes back in the day about gay people, making jokes now about trans people is still not evolving. It's like, what else can you talk about is what I meant in terms of evolving. You've talked about the gay community. Okay, what else can you talk about? Are you funny in other ways beyond just talking about gay people? What do you have to offer?
I agree with you. I just wanted to bring that example up about comedy.
I mean, but that's a good question, though. What else do you think is an example of the left going too far?
The whole Twitter thing. Anytime somebody says anything and they go back 10 years to the beginning of their Twitter to find something, or old Facebook post or anything like that, you know, like you said, people can come to terms with what they did, be held accountable, and do the work to change. And especially if somebody is a minor when this happens. If a kid got a Twitter 10 years ago, he's 22 now, he tweeted something when he was 12. Are we really holding a 12-year-old accountable as an adult now? Like, his brain wasn't even fully formed. He didn't know what he was doing.
I mean,
so
but
you're
going to
hold somebody accountable that said something when they were 12, now they're 22?
You're accountable for your own social media and curating it. If things that don't align with your beliefs today are still up there, why are they still up there? If you've changed, then get rid of that so people don't associate you with those words that you said back in the day. Is that not fair?
So I agree with your point, and I don't think that everybody's cognizant of that. Like, I've deleted stuff that I've posted or said in the past, and I'm like, yeah, that doesn't fit with who I am or what I believe in now that I've learned and had more experience or just grew. But I don't know how many people are going 10 years back in the past and being like, oh, okay, I said this when I was 12. maybe people are going to come for me and try to cancel me for something the fucking preteen said.
You should know that with social media, whatever you say can be out there forever. So you have to do the due diligence to cleanse your social media if need be. You know, it's not something that you have to hold society be like, well, don't go through my stuff. No, if it's still up there, you either delete it or don't have social media. Because I think that you have to have a mindset when it comes to what you're agreeing to when it comes to social media. You're agreeing that what you're saying can come back to bite you. You're agreeing that if something doesn't align with your, you know, beliefs today, you should probably delete it. That's on you if those stuff is still on there. And if somebody decides to come after you, that's not their problem. That's your problem because you said it.
Agreed. Do you have any problems with any other problems with the radical left, as they like to call them, before I list another one?
I would say labels. It used to be that most people didn't want to be defined by labels, whether that be their sexuality, whether that be their, you know, gender or whatever. Like, people didn't want to be defined by those things. But getting away from labels in a way reduces the fact that you're othering yourself, if that makes sense. Like, if you're fully embraced in society, there wouldn't be a need to constantly label yourself. You just exist as who you are, right?
Right, right.
You are more than trans. You are more than gender non-conforming, you know? You are more than your label. And I think as a society, we have to, I think, get away from always wanting to categorize people, because you're a human being first and foremost. You might be black, you might be bisexual, you might be gender non-conforming. That's a piece of who you are as well, but it's not all of who you are. So I think that with labels, we have to be careful with that.
I agree 100%. I think sometimes that labels can have the opposite effect of what you intend. Like you were saying, I think sometimes, you know, people come up with labels and groups to feel a part of something, but at a certain point, it might make you distant and isolate you from other people. So I think that's a hard balancing act to figure out there.
But a lot of people think that the left is too sensitive. Is that a left thing or is that a society thing?
Yeah, I believe people are overly sensitive. And I think that that's not just a left thing. I think that's on the right, too. You see how sensitive they are on the right. They're still claiming that an election was stolen from them. And it wasn't. And they're and you know what? They're keeping up this lie to appease one man's fragile, fragile ego. And you want to call people on the left snowflakes. That's the snowflake. You guys kicked out Liz Cheney from a leadership position because she wouldn't go along with the lie. That's a snowflake, and that's cancel culture. You turn on Fox News, all they talk about is cancel culture. They're canceling Dr. Seuss. They're canceling your kids. They're canceling Jesus. You're canceling people because they don't agree with you. That's what you're doing. You're canceling Liz Cheney because she don't agree with you. They turn AOC into the biggest boogeyman of all time. They cancel people when their opinions don't align with them, and that's overly sensitive because you kick somebody that has been a standard bearer for your party out of a leadership position because she doesn't agree to sell her soul to keep up with a lie.
And there's some people that said that, for another example, that brands like Aunt Jemima, like rebranding themselves based on everything that was uncovered with the history of that brand, is going too far.
They rebranded because their imaging is racist. Like, you have a slave woman, a mammy, as they call it down south, as your fucking character. That's why they rebranded. And Jemima, like, oh my, I don't even want to get started on that shit, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they rebranded.
Right. And I think that's an example of things not aligning with your views. It sucks that it took a huge protest for people to start analyzing the things that are problematic that they've just been selling to us for so long. Because when I was growing up, I thought Aunt Jemima was my real aunt. I always wanted to buy the syrup with the black lady on there. I was like, I want that one.
I have something interesting for you now that you just said that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You said, hey, and I know you were making a joke and jest, like, hey, I always wanted to buy the one with the black lady on it because I thought that was my real aunt, Aunt Jemima. Is representation good even if it's bad? In the sense that, hey, this is clearly an antebellum era slave woman being marketed to us for some wholesome pancakes. It's the only black person we see on a thing like this. So, hey, we feel included, but the image of us is not a good one.
No, I think harm is harm. And if the foundation of that brand is rooted in negative stereotyping and racism, it's not a win, even if that's a black person, because is a win for a corporation the fact that they have a black executive after 30 years? No, it's not a win, because overall, black people aren't represented more in those fields. So just because there's one black face there doesn't mean that that changes anything about the systemic problems that plague the community.
Beautiful answer. Sorry for interrupting you.
No, you're fine. Another thing that I saw, so it said, this article that I'm reading off of was published in the height of the protest last year. So they said that, this is in regards to the film The Help, liberal activists are pushing for Netflix to remove The Help, which documented the historic plights of black maids in the 1960s because it was directed by a white man and based on a book written by a white woman. Viola Davis, who starred in the movie, claims she regrets being part of the project. Despite leftist criticism, the inspirational film was one of Netflix's most viewed pieces of content amid the George Floyd protest. What do you think of that, first of all?
So the only person that's allowed to make black movies now are black people? Like, that's what leads to my frustration, and I'm probably not the best person to have on a podcast about this because I'll get tongue-tied because I get frustrated talking about this.
No, I mean,
stuff,
say
right?
What's on your heart. I think people would love to hear what you have to say because that's why we have the show.
So the book was written in the 2000s, but if that story was written during the time, like how the movie is set, right? Like this woman wrote a book in the early 60s. If that story would have been told from the perspective of a black woman writing that story, it wouldn't have been published because people didn't want to hear about, one, she's a woman. Two, she's black. They didn't want to hear on a mass level about people struggling for their rights. So if that white person writing that story was the vehicle to get the message out, I don't think that's a bad idea.
But that's not what happened.
If it's lending voice.
Right. That's if your hypothetical is the case. But that's not the case in terms of this book. In the case of this book, The Help was written in 2009 and it was directed by a white man and the film was released in 2012. So based on the knowledge that we have with that, do you think that, you know, it's still going too far whenever people are saying that Netflix should remove The Help because it was directed by a white man and written by a white woman?
Yeah. Like, so one, thanks for telling me that. I didn't know there was a book. I thought it was just a movie. So I didn't know when a book was written about it or whatever. But yeah, man, I think that's going too far. Like Brad Pitt produced on 12 Years a Slave. Should we cancel that movie too? Because he's a white man.
Let's dive deeper a little bit. Do you think that it's exploitative in any way for a white person to write a novel about mainly just black people and the plight of black people without having experienced directly what those people are going through? Because what are you drawing from in order to bring those stories to life?
So now, in my mind, I'm answering a question in two different ways. Like this is the first time I found out at live on this podcast that it was a book written in 2009 by a white woman, right? So I only saw the movie and thought that it's a white woman in the 60s interviewing these black maids. So she's telling the story from their perspective. That I was okay with because she was getting firsthand knowledge speaking to these maids, these people, and using their voices and their words to get a message out. If you're telling me this whole thing is fabricated, made up in somebody's mind, then yeah, that's a little exploitative.
From what I remember, I think that the author grew up with the maid. That was what her inspiration was for writing the novel. But other than that, she's obviously not black. So do you still think it's exploitative?
If you are giving somebody voice because they're telling you their story, it's sort of like a biography, an autobiography. I don't think it's exploitative. If a whole situation or scenario is made up, and you're saying, hey, I'm going to tell the story from a black person's perspective, even though I'm not black and I have not talked to any black people about this project, then yes, that's exploitative.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of Viola Davis, who starred in the film? And honestly, her starring in the film was what got her on my radar in the first place. What do you think of her saying that she regrets having any part in the film?
I don't know. I can't speak for her and her feelings at the moment. To me, it sounds like an overreaction in the moment for everything that was happening, to say, oh, well, you know, if people are saying that this wasn't the right thing to do, maybe I shouldn't have been a part of it. I don't know. I thought she was the best part of that movie. But if she has regrets about doing it, then, hey, you have regrets. I mean, it's on film forever. There's nothing you could do about it, you know, but
yeah,
I don't know.
I feel like it's kind of like, I wouldn't say biting the hand that feeds you, but it's interesting because without the film The Help, Viola Davis likely would not be where she is in her career today, because that film got her second Oscar nomination. You know, it got wide acclaim. It got a Best Picture nomination. She was the lead of that movie. And then now that in 2020, when all of this is going on and people view that film as a white savior film, because it is, and now she's like, oh, I regret having part in it. And it's kind of like you can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't reap the benefits of all the awards and nominations that you got based on the film and at the same time, in the same breath, say, but I regret taking part in it. It kind of seems hypocritical, or like you're trying to have it both ways.
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, let's say she would have won the Oscar for that and she would have came out with that same statement. Okay, you're going to give your Oscar back then? Because then that's putting your money where your mouth is, like you said.
Exactly.
About biting the hand that feeds you.
Mm-hmm. Because she did what she had to do, take roles that maybe she didn't want to get the notoriety. Once she got the notoriety, now she feels comfortable in a position to say that she denounces being a part of that film. It's kind of like a slap in the face, and it's kind of in a way hypocritical. And I love Viola Davis, but I think, you know, with the theme of this episode, holding the people that we like, you know, accountable as well, I think I have to call her for what it is on that, to be honest.
See, we got it for everybody. People that we like, people that we don't like, we can hold people accountable. That's very interesting, because I agree with you 100% on what you said about her in this instance. That, yeah, biting the hand that feeds you. You didn't have a problem with it when you were on that set, when you were getting a claim for it. But then again, to loop into what we were saying before, with the value of hindsight, you know, maybe she does feel that that role was problematic. I don't know.
I mean, she's fair to think whatever she thinks. She's a grown woman and she has a mouth and an opinion, and we all do. At the same time, there is a real thing about, you know, black artists in Hollywood having to accept roles that they didn't want to because that's all that was offered to them. And sometimes it's roles that depict black people in a negative way. We're tired of being maids. We're tired of being slaves and drug dealers and prostitutes. There's more to black people than those type of roles.
Right. But my thing is, if it's a period piece, you're going to cast the people, or you're telling the story in a period about what's going on in that period. And this is what people were doing that looked like us in that period. Is that wrong? Is that exploitative? Like, you can't tell 12 years a slave without having black people as slaves.
Of course. Nobody's saying that.
No, I'm not talking about you. I'm just saying in general, right? So you can't have The Help about black maids, because a prevalent occupation for black women in the South during that time period was being maids.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, there can be like, what's the movie with Taraji?
Benjamin Button.
No, Hidden Figures. That's a great movie. We need movies like that where you're focusing on people that were making a big difference, that had careers that were outside of what people thought they could do back then, people that were breaking the mold and breaking glass ceilings. Yes, would love to see more movies like that. But a lot of people's reality was not that.
The problem is, Viola was portraying like a stereotypical character, which is a black maid. You know, we don't need to see more of those. And on top of that, The Help is a white savior movie. I think that that double whammy right there is part of the reason why she feels conflicted about her role in The Help. Although she got the acclaim and everything, it's like, man, that was a white savior film. And on top of that, I portrayed a stereotype in Hollywood that we don't need anymore. I think that's what it is. And also, Hidden Figures is also a white savior movie as well. I personally don't want to see any more white savior movies.
Right, right. No, I get it.
It's tough. It's tough. But what do you guys think? I know we had an interesting back and forth about that. Where do you see that? Is it going too far for people to call for the cancellation from Netflix? I think it is, because it's still a film at the end of the day. We can call things for what they are. Everybody who has seen The Help knows that it's a white savior film. Everybody knows that it portrayed black maids in the 1960s. We know that. Enjoy it for what it is, but understand that that's not reality. Black people are fully capable of being arbiters of their own success and their own change in their own lives. It doesn't take a good white person coming together to help, you know, a black person out for them to finally find success. That's just not true. And I think it actually does us a great harm when, you know, movies continuously portray that, because it's dangerous, and it makes white people feel good at the end of the day. That's why a lot of my teachers growing up in high school, they loved the film The Blind Side, another white savior movie. I can't speak for everybody. I can only just come on here and talk on this podcast and try and enlighten people and bring in different perspectives. That's all I'm qualified to do. But, you know, that's, I guess, the name of the game. But I can't, you know, reach into people's minds to understand them. I can only hope that they do the work themselves to understand the world around them, right?
Is that your nicely worded closing statement there?
It just might be. It sounded really good. You know, a lot of times when I talk on this podcast, I start my sentence, but I never know how it's going to end. So I just keep talking until everything gets wrapped up in a bow. And that time it worked out. Most of the time I just be coming on here and I don't make any sense. That's why we have editing, because I be editing myself. I'm like, nah, I won't be sounding a fool on here. So if Dante and I sound smart, we are smart in general, but I edit us to make sure we sound really good, like we know what we're talking about. But most times we do. So I don't know. Doing this is fun because, you know, we get to just have a good conversation. And this episode went in all different types of directions, right?
It was a beautiful thing. My biggest thing I want to leave y'all with, y'all can steal it. You know, don't tell a lie on me. I won't tell the truth about you.
Ooh, well, I mean, I guess I'll give my last
remark. And that's for anybody who want it. Hit dogs holler. Boom, 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 boom.
I'm keeping that in so people can hear me choking on my water. It's very embarrassing. I'm over here trying to laugh, and then I start choking on Dante's boom, boom bullets. So, I'm just gonna try and say my last words and then I'll let Dante finally close out the show. Thank you guys. Thank you so much for listening. This is very fun for Dante and I. It's kind of like therapy. I know I said I was tired at the beginning of this episode and I feel a lot better now. This podcast kind of energized me, but you guys don't know how much we appreciate you guys listening. The fact that anybody listens to this is, you know, a big deal to us. So continue to let us feel your presence by writing in an anonymous question, sending us stuff, following us on social media. We do respond to DMs and messages, so never feel shy. We love talking to you guys, so you guys don't feel like, oh, Justin and Dante, they're too big, they're too good for us to, you know, ever respond. We will respond. We're normal people with a platform, so, you know, never feel afraid to reach out. And the link is in the bio of our Instagram and it's in the description of every single episode, so be sure to click that link. But that's it for me. Y'all have a great rest of your week.
All right, family, thank you so much, like Justin said, for listening. Thank you for the support and the love and the engagement with us. You know why you're here, you know why you're listening. You know, only thing we ask of you is write us a question, holla at us, tell your friends to tell their friends about it. That's all I got for you this week. I hope you have a great week. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Come back for more next week. For Justin, I'm Dante. We're Polar Opposites, and we will catch you on the next one.